This morning we want to continue with our series on the Constitution of the Kingdom. And you may turn in your Bibles a while to Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. The title this morning is going to be Jesus' Teaching on Swearing and Honesty. And I know that this is probably, you probably say, well, why is Virgil preaching on this one? Well, maybe we'll have a little more understanding on it by the time the sermon's over, because I don't know when the last time was, besides something that's in our decrees or church standards about it and a couple references here and there marked down. I don't remember preaching about it myself on this subject of swearing and oaths and things like that. And the honesty part we have touched, I know, but and I've heard talked about many times, but the part of swearing and oaths that we're going to study into that just a wee little bit this morning. And just to give us a background, before we read the passage out of Matthew chapter 5 and beginning of verse 33, I want us to understand why, for the Jewish people and surrounding context of society in this generation, why it was so important that Jesus talked about this. Specifically because of the fact that it was a new thing. We'll see a little bit of that in a moment. One reason why it was so important for Jesus to bring this to the floor, to the fore, and talk about it and give his new standard was because of this. In the Old Testament, it was fine to use God's name in the form of an oath as long as they did not take his name in vain. In fact, there is a Old Testament command in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6 and verse 13, "Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God and serve him, and shalt swear by his name." It says that so and point blank in Old Testament terminology. It's just that way. And one example of this, we could cite many examples, but one example of this is what Ruth said whenever she was making her commitment in Ruth chapter 1 about verses 16 and 17, right in through there. She said, "The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." She is speaking to Naomi in that occasion. "The Lord do so to me and more also." And that in Old Testament times was a promise, a vow, an affirmation, and it was, in essence, an oath or swearing. Because, I already gave you a Bible verse, in the Old Testament it says, "You shall swear by his name." But it was different if you hit your finger with a hammer and then use God's name. That would be using it in vain, for sure. Or something dramatic happens and then you say something about God's name in an improper way. That's using it in vain, even in Old Testament times. And for sure, it's outlawed in New Testament times. So that was one reason why this is such a big deal, because it was actually commanded and very okay to do it in the Old Testament. Number two, it was a surety of authenticity or reality of guarantee that something was legitimate. And I was reading in a little, just an illustration. So this man wants to buy something that's made out of gold. And so he says, how do you tell me that this is pure gold? It was an illustration from how it would have been back then. And the man asked, so how do you know that this item is of pure gold? And so you tell me it's a pure gold. It's not just gold plated. It is real gold. Yeah, it's real gold. Sometimes people, to make it real, 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 said, I will swear by, and then maybe say something in the temple. We're going to read some verses about that type of thing this morning, so you understand why it was a real big deal. Or the quality of a product. How good is this? And you can guess around. There was no FDA. There was no scientific description on the bottle of medicine that you put in your medicine cabinet. There was nothing like it. It was just kind of like your word against mine, my word against yours. And in Old Testament times, to give validity to, guarantee to, they would say, "I swear by." And And sometimes it was God's name, sometimes it was the temple, and other things. To make it, to give affirmation to the reality, this is guaranteed good stuff. Now, I'm just thinking about this because when we were in the West, one evening somebody said, I want you to try something. So they said, smell this, what's in this bottle here, this jar. And it was a kind of honey. I guess those of us that were there know about this because it was interesting. The smell of that, is that honey? Now taste it. Does it taste like honey? Well, I'm not sure. It had the consistency of honey, but the taste was very unique. It was buckwheat honey. If you ever tasted buckwheat honey, you know that something is a little different about that honey. It's not like clover honey. It's not like some other kinds of honey, but it was honey. And then he said, now let's try this one over here. What was the name of that foam? Something. Meadow foam honey. I tell you, that was scrumptious stuff right there. But if you would have smelled and tasted the buckwheat honey, I would tend to believe that you would have said, I don't know what kind of schmutz that stuff is. I don't know where that came from, but that sure don't taste like honey to me. But it is just as much honey as the metafoam honey, or just as much as clover honey. And so if that would have been back in the day, it would have been okay for someone to say, that give an oath and say that this is honey. Whether you believe it or not, it's honey. And it was, incidentally. Because that was something that just recently was, in my experience, I thought of using it as an illustration here. Number three, why was it such a big deal? To validate a pact or a promise or a covenant between individuals or families or nations. Now, for sake of time this morning, I'm just going to narrow this one down pretty closely. Most of us realize that David and Jonathan were good friends. There's a lot of biblical evidence for that. And there was also a lot of antagonism on part of King Saul toward his son because of his relationship with David. And by the same token, it was hard for them to maintain a congenial relationship because of the potential sparring that could have been, but there was still a brotherhood connection between David and Jonathan that was definitely something deeper than average. And it says, if you read through that story, you see a time or two whenever they made a pact. They swear one to another that this friendship will stand. Not only so, but it was also not only for that between David and Jonathan themselves, but in potential of their families. And we don't know too much about this except for the fact whenever David finally started looking around and saying, where are some of Jonathan's family? And most of us remember the story of Mephibosheth and how he came into the king's house. It was because of a pact, a covenant, a promise that was made by oath between David and Jonathan, not only to affect they themselves, but also their families. And then another illustration of this between nations. Most of us remember the story in the book of Joshua about the time whenever the Gibeonites came and deceived the leaders of Israel. And they came to Joshua and said, this bread we just took fresh out of our ovens when we left our homeland. And we heard about how God is so good and how he's so great. And we were scared that maybe he'd come and tackle our nation and all this stuff. And these shoes, we got them brand new from the shoe store, and I put into my own words. Whenever we left over there, you see they're all tattered and ragged. And you know what? They live just not terrible far away. In fact, they're all but neighbors. But and it says in there that the leaders of the chiefs of the tribes and so on, they swear unto them that there would be an allegiance or an alliance between them, the Israelites and the Gibeonites. And it was a pact between nations. Whenever Israel, throughout their generations, they did become hewers of wood and drawers of water. But whenever they violated that pact, they violated that promise, there was consequences. And there's biblical evidence for that, because it was not only a promise or a covenant between two people, as between Naomi and Ruth, or between David and Jonathan, or a promise to God, or a promise between families. This was between nations, between ethnic groups or nations. Number four, the reason why this was such a big deal, there is something in people throughout the centuries to reach out for validity or credence in something bigger or more sure than they themselves. And let it suffice to say that it is still possible with us that you and I, because of something, imagine you coming home with we talk about these far-fetched stories. And sometimes you hear some. I mean, it could be in the line of conspiracy theories. It could be in the line of some exotic and unheard of almost accident that took place. Like the fellow in Tennessee there where I was, when we bought some of our feed supplies. I remember so well that being there right after it happened, I got into the feed store there that day, and this fellow was hobbling around on crutches and had his leg in a cast. And what the world happened to you? I said, the last time I saw him, he sure wasn't that way. He was out loading trucks with bags and this and that, pushing heavy carts around in the feed mill. He worked there. Now he's in the office in this condition. I said, whatever happened to you? He said, you remember a couple mornings ago, it was a heavy ice around here. He said, I was on top of the grain leg out there. And he said, when I lost my footing and slipped right out through and went down about 100 feet to the ground. And he said, it just so happened that there was two cables that crossed that hold that grain leg up in the air. And he said, I fell right down over that cable and my leg caught in that cable and I spun around. Now, who would believe a story like that unless you saw the man before you? Who would believe a story like that? The two cables cross, right? Who would believe it? And sometimes you hearing a story like that and someone telling a story like that would use affirmations of God's name or something to give validity to what they're telling you. And there's in some of us, even to this day, and down through the centuries from the time way back when, all through time, there's always something in somebody that's going to reach out for something bigger than myself to give validity or credence to the story that I'm telling you. And that's why this is a big deal. Now, with that as a background, let's read Matthew chapter 5, verse 33. Again, ye have heard that it was been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be, yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. So in verse 33, it's plainly stated that in Old Testament times, it was fine to swear and perform oaths and use God's name in that, performing unto the Lord your oaths. And I just gave you a tiny window into the multitude of places and times and occasions where it took place, okay? Just a tiny window. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne. Don't swear by heaven. And whenever people in their exclamations, and sometimes there's a certain group of people that I hate to tell them stories about a tragic event, because it's almost a given ahead of time that they're going to use some kind of an exclamation, like something about heaven or something about God, something about, and use a, expletive, use some kind of an expletive and use God's name in vain, or by heaven, or by, and even in this time it was used by God's throne, neither by the earth, and the stars or the sun or and even some of these by now you might be getting to think, well, maybe I used something like heavens or stars or whatever. There's people that do use that, even probably around here, I guess. Just that's all part of what we're talking about this morning. Neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And the illustration I read about the gold, the fellow eventually said that I'm going to, and he used something about the gold of the temple, or the, it's as good as the gold in the temple, or something like that. And he used an affirmation of an oath to do so. Okay, going on here. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. I don't know why a person would do that. And most of us know that when it's time for hair to change color, we're not going to do much about it, because most of us here this morning aren't using anything to help keep the hair a certain color. Seems like a lot of people have that issue. There's a lot of potential for making it different colors if you want it that way. Most of us have observed that. But that's not where we are this morning. And we shouldn't swear by our head. I don't know why a person would, but anyway. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. And I'm going to just kind of let that one set there a little bit, and we're going to go back to the Old Testament and look at a couple verses just to give us a little background on this. I've already told you one, the command to swear by God's name if you wanted to. It was a permissible thing. But there's some other teaching here that we want to look at, and we're going to Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19, verse 11. And we're looking this morning, as I already stated, the title, Jesus' Teaching on Swearing and Honesty. It's not so much a thing, it's part of the thing, that we should not be using affirmations of God's name to verify and validate or give credence to a true statement. But it's also the thing against dishonesty and just simply stating the truth as it is without any further explanations or a lot of affirmation to prove it. And we're seeing that here in Leviticus 19, verse 11. Ye shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie one to another. Verse 12, and ye shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God. I am the Lord. It's very simply stated, never lie one to another. We have teaching like that in the New Testament. Don't lie to each other. Don't deal falsely. On Friday night, I was talking to a brother, and he was referring to another friend of mine. He said, did you know so-and-so was excommunicated? Well, why? What was the deal? Well, he said they were dealing very dishonestly in their business. And we as a congregation felt that we couldn't have them in our membership because of their dishonesty and shady business deals. And I am happy to hear that there's someone that takes it that seriously, because I've seen dishonesty already in business deals, and they're just as good of members in the church today as they ever were. And they're as dishonest and crooked as could be. I've seen a few things like that. And may God help us to maintain honesty in all areas of our lives. And I speak to myself, because I walk on the same ground everybody else does. And that tendency to be dishonest is very close at home sometimes. Now we're going to go over to Deuteronomy in chapter 23. Deuteronomy 23, and we're reading verse 21. This is, I'll just read it. And it's kind of self-explanatory. Maybe I'll make a slight comment or two about it. Deuteronomy 23, 21, when thou shalt vow a vow unto the Lord thy God, thou shalt not slack to pay it. For the Lord thy God will surely require it of thee, and it would be sin in thee. But if thou shalt forbear to vow, it shall be no sin in thee. That which is gone out of thy lips thou shalt keep and perform, even a free will offering, according as thou hast vowed unto the Lord thy God, which thou hast promised with thy mouth. There's a verse in Ecclesiastes that if you vow a vow, defer not to pay it. In other words, if you vowed a vow, you got an obligation. If you made a promise, you need to keep it. And this is just simply saying that vows and promises are meant to be kept. But if you don't promise it, you're not quite as obligated. It's making it very, very clear here that that's exactly the way it is. That which is gone out of thy lips, thou shalt keep and perform. In Psalm 15, there's a verse in there that says, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. Sometimes you make a promise, I'm going to sell this item for so and so amount. And you realize that you went back and maybe you just gave an off the top of your head figure. But you know what? If you lose $50, it's better to lose $50 or $500 or even $5,000 than to go back on your word. It's better to swear to your own hurt and lose than to be dishonest in what you said. And you know what? It's just a little hard as these words go out of my mouth to go and collect them back in and put them back in here again and retract them. It just doesn't happen. And that's one reason why, my dear friends, this morning we need to be really careful as we talk to people, about people, as we deal in business, as we work with different situations, because words just don't come back in once they're gone out of our mouth. And that's why Jesus' teaching is so very, very important. And yet, sometimes in our humanity, we do make mistakes. But let's especially be careful this morning about things we promise or things we vow or make commitments or covenants about. Jesus, in the teaching of Matthew 5, referred specifically, you shouldn't swear by heaven or by the earth or by God's name. You should not do that. Why is that a problem? What is it that Jesus is referring to? Some of us know by heart possibly the verses in Psalm 48 verses 1 and 2. It goes something like this: great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth, is Mount Zion in the sides of the north, the city of the great King. And Jesus does not want us in New Testament times and down through the church age, he does not want us to use affirmations to our promises that have to do with the city of the great King. And God's name, he does not want us to do that. Brother Merle just read to us in the service on Wednesday evening in a comment about the revival meetings that were during just two or so weeks ago. He used this as a testimony in what he shared, and I'm going to read it again because it's all but saying the same thing Jesus says, in the sense that the heaven is God's throne and the earth is his footstool. And also it talks about the temple here. And I know that you're wondering, what about the temple? But we're going to soon get there. If you just give us a little bit of time yet. Isaiah 66 verses 1 and 2. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me? And where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath my hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord. But to this man will I look, even to him that is of a poor and a contrite spirit, and that trembleth at my word. And I just wanted to read that so we understand why it is serious to use affirmations that a lot of people around us do, as they make an expletive or something about heavens or stars or a couple other things, or God's name, using it in vain. That's one of the Ten Commandments that still stands. You shall not take the name of, take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. It still stands. And Jesus obviously reinforced that. Now we're going over to Malachi chapter 3. There's a lot of things that the prophet Malachi, he had a very tough job. If you've ever read through the book of Malachi, and I've done at least some meditating on this, maybe not near as much as other people, but I have meditated some on the book of Malachi, and one of the verses that's here has to do with the subject this morning, and I'm specifically looking at Malachi 3:5. And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the adulterers, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. So there is judgment coming upon the sorcerers. Those are involved in idolatry. Brother Mike had that this morning for us, and I was impressed with the illustrations, and I was thinking about some points that we might have coming up here in the message. Sorcerers, idolatry, idol worship, and, of course, we're looking here at occultism, against the adulterers, those that are unfaithful in their marriage commitments, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress. They're hired, those who they're hiring, those who oppress them, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right. God's going to judge that. And it says it very plainly. All right, now we're going to New Testament, Matthew 23. This is going to bring into some perspective some of the, at least a few possibly, of the thoughts we've already given. Because this is something that Jesus was adamant about and wanted people to pay attention to, including you and I this morning. Matthew 23, verse 16. Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing. But whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon it, he is guilty. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, the altar that sanctifieth the gift. Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar sweareth by it, and by all things thereon. And whoso shall swear by the temple sweareth by it, and by him that dwelleth therein. And he that shall swear by heaven sweareth by the throne of God, and by him that sitteth thereon. You see how Jesus takes us to a totally different level when he is looking at us as New Testament believers and saying to us that when you say by heaven or by God's name, you're including the whole package. And none of us have any rights to do that. To take things to that level of affirmation, we shouldn't do that. James chapter 5 and verse 12. James chapter 5 and verse 12. This is a very familiar passage here. And a lot of verses that we read regularly. But tucked in here, James 5:12 says, but above all things, my brethren, swear not. Above all things, swear not. And why does he say that? First of all, it's a reflection. And as Jesus began both to do and to teach, so the apostles continue to do and to teach. And they bring out some of the very points that Jesus brought out. And it says, above all things, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, and your nay, nay. And for what reason? Lest ye fall into condemnation. Now, one thing that I find interesting about this and Jesus' teaching, most of us remember that not so long ago we had the story of Peter. And what did Peter do whenever the maid came clear near to him and said, I think that you were out in the garden with him, right? What did he do? Three times. What did Peter do? He denied. In one place it says he cursed and he swore that he did not know Jesus. And whenever you think about cursing and swearing that you don't know Jesus when you've walked with him and talked with him and seen him on the Mount of Transfiguration and seen him in the raising Jairus' daughter, when you've seen him in some of the specific, when you've seen him in the garden there and too sleepy and whatever else, Peter, in his human weakness, cursed and swore that he did not know Jesus. Imagine how hard that was. And when Jesus, beholding him, and when Jesus was in trial and saw Peter back there, imagine how Peter felt when he knew that he totally swore and cursed, and Jesus said, don't do it. Think about how Peter felt. Think about the conviction that fell upon him when he had totally denied his Lord. And that's one reason this brings it into perspective, because maybe you and I speak to myself this morning, maybe there's a time in my life when I totally go against what is right and good, and I know it's wrong, and I do it anyway. That potential lies within us. Okay, let's bring this down to some practical terms. For some civilizations through the years, and for some of the Anabaptists, and I am quite certain even today for many of God's people, swearing or not swearing is a life and death matter. Taking an oath or not taking an oath is a life or death matter. If I understand it correctly, and I didn't dig into this, but I think that in Roman times there was something like an oath to the emperor as being the supreme authority in your life, something like that. And I don't know if you get to a Kim Jong in North Korea if there would be an allegiance or something to that effect, that it would be life or death if you give an oath of allegiance to the leader of your country, the king or whatever. I don't know where all that stands today. I do know that in some of the stories that you probably would read in the Martyr's Mirror and in the Whale's Belly and some of them, I do know that there was a time when there was an image going down the street in a procession, and it was a heathen festival type deal. And part of that whole event was swearing of an oath of allegiance to an image, a graven image, and making an oath or some type of swearing commitment to an idol. And in one story I recall reading, there was an Anabaptist that knew that he had to get out of that area, make himself scarce, because he was not going to do that. And so that happened, and also to idols, an allegiance to or a commitment to a given image or idol. All right, so you say, well, this still don't sound really, really pertinent to me, so let's go to another one. So you're traveling to Central America and possibly to some other countries. So they give you this travel document. It says, so you're traveling to this, where are you going, airline such and such, and you write down your name. You say, well, I never did this either. Well, maybe you didn't, but some of us have. And so what's the valuables that you're bringing? Well, I'm bringing such and such tractor parts because of I'm going to be, and that amount is this much. My personal luggage and stuff is this much. I'm bringing a part for somebody's, that's this much, somebody's sewing machine. Some of that stuff happens, okay? People traveling back and forth, and you get these documents. At the bottom, it says the value of such and such totals this much. And then in the fine print, if you look, it says on some of those documents, I'm not saying they all say it, but I swear that this is valid documents that I'm going to sign here as a swearing of affirmation that this is true. And if you read other languages, it says other the word for swearing or giving an oath that this is validity. What do you do? As soon as you get to customs, they're going to read it, and they're going to see if it's signed or not. They're going to look at those digits that are on there. What do you do? Personally, for numerous years, I've checked to see if that's there or not, and I've put, as is correct to do in editing, I put a slash through the word juro, which is in Spanish, or swear as in English. I put a one line through that and above afirmo, which means affirm or affirm, because I just want us to know that up till this point in U.S. of A, when you have to give an adoption declaration or a declaration in court, they have you lay your hand on right hand on the Bible, or is it the left hand? One hand on the Bible, and I think the right hand goes up in the air like this, and you have to swear that such and such is truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So what do? As of yet, in this country, we're allowed to say, I affirm. And before the laws of the land, that is equal to an oath. Equal to. But what happens if, because of things that are happening in politics, that goes away? And a swearing oath would be required. Then what? In legal documents, I've already mentioned that. Court testimony. Swearing is what most people do. Legal documents having to do with adoption, court hearing, witnesses, jury duty, etc. I realize that some of that, most of us have never done it, but some of us have, and we need to be firm on what Jesus says. Finally, brother, above all things, swear not at all. And that's pretty serious. When God says, swear not at all, we need to take it seriously. Also, for at least United States and Canada, if you're going into citizenship, now this might have changed recently, but I read last night in the encyclopedia the very thing where citizenship, the oath of citizenship. And you want to make sure that you're knowing what you're committing to before you take that. I'm just saying it because it's pretty serious lines written in there. Also, none of us probably are aiming to become president of the United States, but there's an oath. There's swearing that goes on as a person is inaugurated. This happens with chief justices. It happens with the police department. I was looking at some documents not so long ago, and officer so-and-so duly sworn to thus and thus and thus and thus and thus. Duly sworn to. And that's pretty high obligation in other government offices. And also military involvement. Now it is stated there that they can affirm. And I understand that there was at least one president in the United States that did not swear when he took his presidential office. He said, I affirm. That's an interesting detail. And why did he do that, pray tell? Maybe because he had just a little more respect to what this book says and what Jesus taught. The military oath of allegiance is phenomenal. I just was reading that last evening, and it just spoke to me about those of us that are in the army of Christ against the powers of the evil one and what kind of commitments that requires of us. But that's not our subject this morning. I go back to say in the United States and some other countries, to affirm is accepted and viewed with equal value as to swear an oath. I do not know if that permission is going to stay forever with us here in the United States or in other countries. I do not know. And I don't know if all countries give that exception either. But my final points this morning have to do with, but let your communication be. So what should our communication be? Jesus says, yea, yea, nay, nay, but whatsoever is more than these cometh of what? Cometh of evil, Jesus said. My dear friends, this morning, yes, for the people of God, should mean yes. Yes does not mean maybe. Our no should mean no, and not maybe. If it is maybe, or is it going to rain this afternoon? Maybe. We don't know. We can't give an affirmation, yay or nay, if it's going to rain today. Possibly. Possibly not. We can say maybe. That case, it's fine. But whenever you say yes, does it mean yes? When I say no, does it mean no? If we mean yes, let's say yes. And we don't need to add a bunch of affirmatives behind it. We need to let your communication be a love of honesty and a hatred of falsehood. Let that be your communication. Even in the Old Testament, we have some similar teaching to this, and my attention was drawn to Psalm 34. Psalm 34, I'm just going to read a couple common verses. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? 34:13. Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Just good teaching there. In the book of Proverbs, it says this statement: whoso keepeth his mouth keepeth his life. Let your communication be. Whoso keepeth his mouth keepeth his life. Another proverb says this: whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. And my dear friends, this morning, the use or misuse of this little flapper inside in between our teeth has a lot to do with how much trouble we can get into or stay out of. Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue, this little part right here, keepeth his soul from troubles. I want to remind us again this morning some common words out of the book of Matthew again, chapter 12 and verse 36 and 37. What shall our communication be? What Jesus said, but let your communication be. And what it is? What is it then? But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Why? Because out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. It said that earlier in verse 34. So what about those idle words? And sometimes it's almost humorous to listen to a person that's got a lot of adjectives and a lot of adverbs and a lot of, I mean, it, sometimes it's actually humorous to listen to it, but then I think, and I might do it myself. And how much of that is idle words then? Just something to keep in mind as we watch what we say. What shall our communication be? Colossians chapter 4. Of course, any one of these verses we could expound on a long time, but we're not planning to do that. I just want to leave a couple practicals for us this morning as we think about this thing of Jesus' teaching on swearing and honesty, because the honesty part is where it really needs to apply to you and I. Colossians 4 verse 5. Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. That's a sermon in itself, as late brother Paul Freed would have said, right? Sermon in itself. Verse 6, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man. So is our speech with grace, with carefulness, walking in wisdom toward them that are without. How is it in our personal lives? Seasoned with salt, salty words. Titus chapter 2, verse 7. What shall our communication be? Communication not only being our words, but also our lifestyle. Some of these verses touch both. The one we just read, walking wisdom toward them which are without. Here again, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works. This is Titus 2:7. In doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. And then, of course, if we go on to Brother Mike's devotion this morning about that mule, he talked about how that after the mule didn't move, whenever the man gave him some encouragement to, he went up and grabbed a hold of the bridle. If you go over to the book of James, it talks about a bridle steering the horse. And that talks, it speaks about our tongue, the little helm that directs a ship in the ocean, that small helm. And yet it talks about our tongue. And we need, my dear friends, our communication should be a reflection of a restrained tongue. In James chapter 3, you can read about it if you need something to read in your personal devotions today. Two little statements that I want to leave as we bring this to an end is, my word is my keeper. Someone asks, how do I know to believe you? I mean, you told me this story, how do you know what's true or not? This person simply answered, my word is my keeper. In other words, I said it, that's what I meant, that's it. Sometimes we're misinformed. But falsehood, as we've been talking about this morning, is an intention of words or actions to deceive. But this morning I want us to remember that our word is our keeper. And I'm going to borrow something from the Nez Perce chief. Nez Perce was a group of an Indian tribe, and they asked him about such and such a thing, and he just simply said, it takes few words to tell the truth. Whenever you walk up to somebody, they need to explain around and 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 around about why it's true and why it's really so and why it's not that way but why it's this way. Yay, yay, nay, nay. Yes means yes, not maybe. If it's true, it's true. It stands on its own. It doesn't need a lot of props and cables to hold it up. It takes few words to tell the truth. I trust this is practical for us this morning and be a little guiding light as we face the unknown future. Those who care to